This is a replay of the Wednesday night, August 2nd, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. How about tonight? We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. I hope you'll join me. I'll probably give you a reason to call, but if you've got a thought yourself, boy, I want to hear it. 888-876-5593-8888-Raleigh. So listening to David Jennings about an update on the writer's strike, I don't blame a bit. I don't blame any of these people that are striking in the name of AI, particularly when it comes to people on screen. This is something that needs to be resolved now, because the downside of it for the worker is just horrendous. It brings me back to many decades ago when residuals were first being discussed. The idea that your performance could be played and played and played again and you'd get no part of it, well, that used to be commonplace. Well, now the idea that through artificial intelligence, your work can live on forever in new and different ways and you not be a part of it. So yeah, I absolutely get that. But on the other hand, I absolutely understand what employers are faced with, why AI is so tantalizing, particularly when it comes to the creative arts, but probably everything else too. Yeah, the restaurant business for sure. The deal is that more than anything, the employer is concerned about his entire economic fate in the hand of lunatics. Now, let me flesh that out a little. When Top 40 Radio started, the guy who was most responsible for getting the ball rolling, Todd Storrs, was always lauded as a real supporter of programming, because far too many other owners were more concerned only about the sales, figuring the programming would take care of itself. Todd knew damn well that the equation was actually the other way around. Sales followed good programming. So no one could consider him to be an opponent of great programming. No one. And so why is it that he was one of the first who decided he could automate a radio station to, by the way, a completely disastrous result? But nonetheless, at the time, he was overheard as saying, I can't believe my life is in the hands of seven lunatics, you know, at each individual station, meaning the disc jockeys, and, you know, who were an interesting lot all the way around. And I could certainly sympathize with why he thought that. Back then, common ads in the trades in Broadcasting Magazine that wanted to hire disc jockeys would say, no floaters nor drifters need apply, because basically that's exactly what they were getting in terms of that. So Todd had just had it up to his eyeballs with the idea that his entire income in any given market was resting in the hands of less than a handful of guys, and in some cases just the zany night jocks, so to speak. So he decides, well, I'm going to automate. Now, of course, this is 1961. when he first comes across this concept. I don't think he actually tries it till 62 in Oklahoma City. But nonetheless, he gets together some reel-to-reel recorders and a bunch of Mackenzies, which were the pre-runners to cart machines, and does this. And again, here is the guy who is lauded by everyone in the industry for his support of programming, yet here he is automating. Well, it didn't work out too well in Oklahoma City, but not badly enough that he wouldn't try it again. And so it was that he decided he'd try it at WQAM in Miami. And I'll never forget the fateful day. Oh, man. They finally got it all together, they thought, with the Mackenzies and with the Scullies and everything else, and all the equipment's ready to go. And of course, what they had the jocks do later became very commonplace with recording tracks, recording liners, recording, you know, one bit after another, or the time or the weather or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. And so it was that this was kicked off in the afternoon on the Charlie Murdoch show, who happened to be program director of the radio station, the guy who was supposed to be selling it to the other guys that this was a good idea. And at this point, no one was being replaced. This was just, we can have a handle on it, and, you know, if they don't show up for work, it's not going to be a problem. So the show begins, and over the first two records are Charlie's liners for the entire afternoon, firing in rapid succession one after the other, making him at best to appear demented, at worst I'm not sure. And so it was that shortly thereafter, Todd's automation came to a screeching halt. Yeah, but I mention that because the idea, even with somebody who was so supportive of workers, the idea that there would be a way to automate them, or in today's parlance, to use artificial intelligence in their replacement, was very tantalizing, not because he didn't want to pay them salaries. You know, that never even came into the equation in the discussions. I mean, sure, it might have been a boost, but it didn't even get to that kind of a level where that was discussed, mostly because he wanted his fate in his own hands and didn't want to depend upon, as I say, a handful of lunatics. And I'm not sure that it's entirely different anytime you hear it. I had a friend years ago who was a general manager of the busiest Red Lobster in America, true story, and he wound up with a heart attack, absolutely. And, you know, when I talked to him, because the reason I knew him, he's a record collector, and later he was working for Val Shively. But when I talked to him about this, what was so stressful about it, it was one and only one thing, employees. And his stories were legendary. And, I could imagine every one of them and the horror that he felt at each turn. And so I don't think we're going to get away from individuals, employers, and such who want to replace the workforce. And I hope with the strike that we're not going to see a thing where, in fact, creative people are in danger of being impersonated by AI and losing, you know, whatever revenue they thought they had. But on the other hand, I certainly understand that drive. You know, there's got to be a way. I'm not at the mercy of lunatics. That's what it comes down to. And I would think that there is not an employer within earshot of me who doesn't relate to this on some level. And of course, now even harder when we see a situation that in many cases the employer can't even find the workers. Yeah, that's a startling discussion we have very often. But while I was listening to David Jennings there, I could see the look on Charlie Murdoch's face as I was listening, as all of his wild tracks run one after the other over a Connie Francis record or what have you. But I get it. I absolutely get it. So, but $300,000 to $900,000, man. Now we'll see how many people are lining up for that job. And who at this point is capable of doing it? I think that's going to be the real interesting thing in the next several years too, because it's not going to be just a line extension upward. It's going to be a rocky road at best, and it's going to be fun to watch. All right, Leah's in Marcus Hook. Welcome to WGN Radio, Leah. What's up tonight?
Hi, Raleigh. How are you?
Well, I'm here.
Yeah, me too.
All right.
I first I wanted to mention something about Albert. Sunday was his sober anniversary, 29 years.
Wow, 29 years. That's yeah. wonderful. That's absolutely yeah. wonderful.
I'm so proud of him, yeah.
Now, at 30 years, does he get a pin the size of a boulder? What happens?
I don't know. He's going to, well, I said we'll go to a meeting together, and I want to watch you get a chip, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
30-year chip.
Hell, a chip, he's going to get the whole damn brick.
Yeah, I know.
That's great.
I know. And I often tell him, now you're the man that I always knew you could be.
Ah, isn't that sweet?
Yeah,
all right. Well, that's wonderful.
Because I used to, back in the 90s, I would look at him and I would think, there is a better man trying to get out. And there is a better man inside of him. And so that's what I always tell him now. He's the man I always knew he could be.
Ah, well, that's a wonderful story. I'm thrilled.
Yeah. And I went to the weight loss doctor today. I lost 14 more pounds.
And this is on Ozempic. You're now doing it once a week rather than three times in a day.
Right. Once a week, yeah. And so that's 42 pounds altogether.
Congratulations. So that's wonderful. And you're not having any untoward side effects?
No. That's like a Backstreet Boy, you know?
Wow. All right. All right.
So, and the other thing is I'm going for another procedure. I'm getting this, I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's called photobiomodulation.
I love it already. Tell me all about it.
And they're only charging me $37 for five body parts.
Yeah, all right. So, I think I do know what this is because the very interesting thing today, we spent 5 hours at the doctor, and one of the things that they were talking about was PBM, which I think is what you're talking about, where you're talking about red light to stimulate.
Yeah. And they wrap you up, and they use this red, I guess it's some kind of red light, and it stimulates the fat cells. And then the fat drains out through your lymphatic system.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, how about that?
Yeah. So everybody has problem areas that don't, like when you lose weight, they still stay there, you know, like hips or whatever, you know. And they're going to do five different body parts for $37.
Oh, my God.
It's far, though. We have to drive like an hour and 15 minutes.
Where is this?
It's in Richboro.
Oh, all right. So you're going to Bucks County.
Yeah, it's like up in Doyle, near Doylestown
I know exactly. All right.
Yeah.
Well, very...
So I'm going to do that on the 16th.
Huh. How about
and,
that?
She said they get a lot of people on Ozambic that come there because they have, like, problem areas, you know?
Wow.
That, you know, just regular weight loss doesn't touch, you know?
Low-level laser therapy. Well, it's a little different than the thing they were telling John about. I don't know what this thing is, but it was the same kind of red light therapy, that's for sure, but it doesn't work quite the same.
Oh, the laser lipo, maybe?
No, it's not about losing weight or anything like that. It's more about a stroke. But it does involve red lights. I do know that.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
Maybe infrared or something?
I don't know. I've got a link to it. And of course, after being there 5 hours, I didn't even bother to bring it into the studio. I'm like, I'll read this some other time. But when you mentioned that, I know PBM is red light based.
Yeah, it is. It is. So, I don't know. They didn't say about any bad side effects, so I haven't Googled it or anything. I don't want to know.
I don't know that there are any. I think the bad side effect is it doesn't work and you're out $37. But
still, the laser lipo is $5,000.
Yeah, I think that if you were already compromised, like let's say you were dealing with chemotherapy or, the results of lymphedema or something like that, then there are probably side effects. But if you are, you know, all you're trying to do is lose some weight, you don't have a big health issue. I have not heard about this having side effects.
Well, my anemia has come back pretty bad. I don't know if that would affect it.
I don't know. I'm sure it's online, and at some point you'll read about it, but I'll tell you, don't be afraid to read about it, because from what I understand, it's not going to be anything where you're saying, oh, my God, I'll never do this. Hell, if you're doing the Ozempic, you'll do anything.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Yeah, boy, I tell you what.
No, I won't have gastric bypass surgery. I will not do that.
No, absolutely not.
I know someone who had it done, and I know several people who had it done, and they say it's the worst. The worst.
Well, the saddest thing about that is the number of people who've had it done that over the next decade gain the weight back.
Yeah, and then I know Sharon Osbourne had that lap band surgery, and she had it reversed because she was sick all the time.
Okay.
She couldn't, every time she smelled food, she got nauseous.
Interesting. Yeah, that's nice while you're losing weight, but after a point, it's like, hey, I'd like to eat again.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, wow. All right. Yeah, well, interesting you'd bring that up. Like I say, I just saw this thing. I obviously didn't pay enough attention. I can't tell you anything about it, but definitely was red light therapy about it today. So we'll compare notes.
Yeah, I don't know. How does your lymphatic system actually drain?
Well, it can drain manually for one thing, you know, and that's why there's massage and there's other thing. I mean, even you know, this is going to sound weird, but even jumping up and down on a little treadmill. Hang on a minute, though. Don't go away. Stay where you are.
Okay.
And we'll pick that up. But if you're a radio lover, and I know if you listen to me that you are. Hopefully you know all about Bob Crane and the Sea Crane Company, and you know all about ccradio.com. But if you haven't been there lately, you haven't been there. A ton of great products and great information as well. And I want you to look at the CC Radio 2E. It's just better. And you can do the test yourself. If you have one, put it next to the average radio. Maybe sounds good, but, you know, just the average radio. Yeah, tune to a weak AM signal. See how the average radio does. Then try it with the CC Radio 2E, and it will blow your socks off. Because like everything Bob Crane has developed, it's just got better reception. Killer AM reception and killer FM reception. Just better. And great sound as well. Not only that, it's my bedside companion. I have it right there next to me. It's got a lighted dial if you want it to be lit. And it's got a clock, and it's got all the bells and whistles, some presets, and weather band, weather alert, all that. You can also fine-tune with it. It's just a great, great radio. But what makes it so really great is it sounds good, and more to the point, it will pick up more than probably anything on the market today. So go to ccradio.com, ccradio.com. By the way, when you're there, sign up for the Sea Crane newsletter. You'll be the first to know about exclusive offers. Yeah, that makes sense, and they're not trying to data mine you and all that kind of stuff. If you can't go online, well, there's hope for you yet, because the Sea Crane Company has the best customer service. So call them, 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. They'll answer all your questions, and if you want to order by phone, they'll do that too. Of course, you know, if you want the fastest possible shipping, go to Amazon or something like that. But if you want the real deal radio experience and some great information as well as great products, go to ccradio.com. You look at the CC Radio 2E, and you tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio.
Three, four, five, six, seven, eight, 19.
Red light! I cried last night and all the night before. I cried last night and all the night before. Gonna change my way of living, I won't have to cry no more.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, 19.
Red light!
Five, six, seven, eight, 19.
Red light.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. So we're talking about red lights, and the first song that came to mind was 1, 2, 3, Red Light, and I said, no, we are not playing the 1910 Fruit Gun Company. Try again, Raleigh. And then I thought about Roy Milton, Red Light. Yeah, 1961. And I thought it was a delightful record. And Roy, actually, more than any single person, was the reason that Art Rupp's Specialty Records was a successful label. Yeah, back in the early days. And he left there in the mid-50s and then was on Dootsie Williams' Dootone Records for a bit and a few other nondescript labels. But then he wound up on the Johnny Otis Show. Yeah, touring with Johnny. About the time that he was doing Red Light, actually. He started out, interestingly enough, touring with Ernie Fields. Yeah, if you remember him and his version of In the Mood, one of the best ones on Rendezvous. All right, well, I digress. We're talking to Leah about the lymphatic system, I believe. You were asking me about lymphatic drainage, or what were we talking about?
Yeah, that's what we were talking about.
All right, well, you know what your lymph system is, right? You understand that?
Not really.
All right, well, let's go back and say that it's part of the circulatory system in a way. It's a vital part of your immune system. That's why people will talk about, oh my God, I've got raised lymph glands and I must have some infection or something. But what it really does is it's collecting the excess of body fluids. And actually, the way it normally drains is through the kidneys. And so let's see if I can simplify this some way. Plasma, the liquid part of your blood, flows out of the capillaries. And thinking about it is like water seeping out of a sponge. Now, so mm-hmm. Where does the liquid go? Well, what it's doing, it's a great delivery system. It's delivering oxygen and nutrients to all the tissues surrounding the capillary. And the tissues hungrily soak it up. And they leave behind waste, basically. You know, so you're eating dinner and you leave behind a load of sticky napkins, okay? Well, the plasma doesn't mind cleaning up the mess. It's going to return it to the bloodstream the same way it can. But here's the deal. They say it's like 20 liters flows out and 17 liters returns. So what happened to the other 3 liters? All right, now this is where we get the lymphatic system. And lymphatic capillaries pick up this fluid, and then they drain it. And the way they're going to do this through lymphatic vessels is it's going to reach one of the ducts in your upper chest. You've got two big ducts in your upper chest, and they merge into large veins and all that. And the bottom line is that from there, the lymph can re-enter your bloodstream and flow through the body. But you also have your kidneys are involved in this as well, and other things. But I'm sure anybody who actually has an MD after their name is vomiting with this description. But it's the best. It's probably the best I can do. So that's why when people will say, you know, well, I need to have my lymphatic system drained. The easiest way to do it, by the way, is move your muscles, get your heart rate up. And that'll stimulate lymphatic flow. And that's what you want. You don't want this to glug up, so to speak. There's a technical term for you. And your body needs a lymphatic system because it's the garbage man. It's going to remove the waste. And so if it doesn't do that, then the theory is that the bacteria or the toxins or can lead to cancer and all that kind of thing. So you want the lymphatic system to clean you out. And so there are many ways that it does that. But one of the best things, and that's why they always talk about it when you're talking about going on a diet or whatever, is healthy weight. Losing the weight is really good because obesity damages the lymphatic system.
And yeah. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
to me.
So, well, good. I'm glad it made sense to somebody in any event. So that's why, like I say, I had the little trampoline in the corner that I would jump up and down on all the time to start that lymphatic system.
And, if this thing works well, then I'm going to be like a once a month customer.
Yeah. And other things that stimulate the lymphatic system, massage does, obviously. There are some herbs, and I'll tell you, I always hesitate to say that because, you know, herbs can be really good or really bad depending on do you really know what you're doing.
I love it when people say, oh, it's all natural. Yes, no, so is hemlock.
That's right. Yes, or arsenic or anything else. That's exactly right. But, you know, your lymph system is absolutely vital. I mean, think about never taking out the garbage again. Well, that's what would happen if you didn't have a lymph system.
Oh, wow. And you mentioned plasma. There's a thing where you can go to New Jersey at this lab in New Jersey, and they pay you $900 for your blood plasma.
Well, I'm not totally surprised. Plasma obviously is needed. And, of course, particularly if you're certain blood types. So I wouldn't be totally surprised. Plasma donations take a lot longer than blood donations do. So you'd be sitting there.
Yeah, it has to be done in a special lab, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it's not that it's the lab. That's true, by the way, but it's you'll be there twice as long. So
it
ain't quick. But every now and then you'll hear the Red Cross will have a plasma drive or what have you. And so it is absolutely needed. And there are, you know, certain cases where you have a problem where your body is losing plasma and you might absolutely need that transfusion to be alive. Plasma is 90% water, but there are obviously other life-giving things in it. And 55% of your blood's plasma.
Wow, so, that I didn't know.
Yeah, so, you know, but like I say, there's a lot of serious health problems that they use plasma for. That's why they need to have that on hand. Transplantation or certain cancers, strokes, things like that, you're going to wind up with a need for a plasma. And it's, like I say, it's a little different than whole blood. It you know, goes from your arm through this machine, and then it separates the different parts of the blood, and the parts that are left over, including your red blood cells, go back into your body along with a saline solution. And it takes over an hour, easily over an hour.
That's not too bad, though.
Well, if you're sitting there with a needle in your arm just, you know, not worrying about it, well, I don't know. For some people, that's a deterrent. For other people, they don't mind it at all. And then the
For $900, I don't think it's bad.
Well, I'm not sure that everybody gets the I'd have to look that up. What I'm saying is it might be a rare blood type that's getting the $900.
I don't think they'd take mine, as anemic as I am, though.
Well, there's a lot of things they won't take, but then there's other things that they don't look at all. For instance, there's controversy among some people who are not fans of the COVID vaccine, who are very upset that plasma and other donated blood is not segregated. So if you went in saying, I want to make sure there's no mRNA, there's no spike protein, or whatever the heck it is, you can't do that because there's no segregation of that.
Oh,
and so,
wow.
You know, and some people will tell you, well, that's because it doesn't matter. And other people will tell you, I'd rather die than do it. You know, so there's a zillion opinions, and I won't weigh in on that on this show. But nonetheless, you know, then there's platelet donations as well, which is a whole different deal. And
yeah, that's a whole different deal.
And right. Right, and they're double red. There's all sorts of things that, you know, platelet. We're only collecting the platelets. It's interesting. I think Mayo takes platelet donations.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. The problem with them is they can only be stored for use for 5 days.
Really?
Yeah. 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 So anyway. Hmm. That's this red light thing. I don't see any downside to it, but of course, again, hey, I'm a you know, disc jockey who talks too much, not a medical professional. So you need your medical information somewhere else. But from what I know, it shouldn't be a problem, and I can't wait to hear every detail.
Yeah, she said it was a little warm, and I'm like, well, I'll probably ask you to kick up the air conditioning then. She was laughing.
Yeah, or maybe not. You know, I mean, everybody's definition of warm is different.
Yeah, well, I'm just glad the humidity went away. We have a break in the humidity.
And I've always said that humidity to me is the worst. It makes it makes cooler temperatures feel just awful. It makes hotter temperatures feel just awful. To me,
you can't breathe. I can't. If you have asthma like me, I can't. Yeah. Can't breathe.
There's nothing colder than 40 degrees with 95% humidity.
I know.
I'll take 0 degrees with 2% humidity over that any day of the week.
Any day. Yeah, like you're always saying, you can always put more clothes on when it's cold, you know?
But, you know, with that humidity, it's a chill to the bone. It's the most dank feeling.
Oh, and it's just in the summer with the heat and the humidity, it's just...
Oh, I know.
When I went to Florida to live with my dad one time, oh, my God, I thought I was going to die. I got off the train, and I just wanted to get right back on.
Believe me, I know. Yes, I lived in it for many years, and I look back to it now and think, how did I survive that?
Yeah, I don't know. When you talk about it, I'm like, how did she survive in Florida?
Yeah, I don't know. And, of course, you know, I was a kid, so back then, of course, you want to dress whatever's hip or fashionable or all that. Well, here comes fall, and it's all these winter clothes, and it's 85 degrees with 100% humidity. And there I am.
It's like living in someone's sweaty armpit.
Yeah,
ew.
Yeah, I know. And Florida's more popular by the day.
I know. I just don't get it. But then, the thing is, then we would go and visit, like, one of his friends, you know, and they all lived in these trailer parks.
Oh, God.
And you go into one of their trailers, and it's like a meat locker.
I think you're talking Central Florida there. That's the trailer capital
of the world. It was like Pompano Beach Fort Lauderdale, Pompano Beach area.
All right. Yeah, well, there's no shortage of trailers throughout the state, that's for sure. And they're not known for their phenomenal insulation, especially back then.
Yeah. And I was just like, and we would move like every 2 weeks. And then, like,
I hesitate to ask why.
Oh, because wherever his jobs were, you know.
All right.
He was a stand-up comic, so wherever his jobs were.
Yeah.
And then one day I was sitting there watching TV, and a lizard crawled across the screen, and I said, that's it. I'm going back to PA. I'm not living with lizards in the house.
Just for a little gecko? No, they're harmless. It's when you have enough palmetto bugs that you can race them.
Yeah, and I would stand, I would go outside to have a cigarette, and that's when I smoked. And I would go outside, and I would be standing in the driveway, and it would be sunny on my side of the street, and it would be raining on the other side of the street.
Absolutely. That's 100% true.
This is so weird. Is it the end of the world? What is happening?
No. Well, it's also interesting that it can be sunny everywhere, and 10 minutes later it can be a downpour, and then a half hour after that it's sunny everywhere again.
I know. Florida's very weird. Well, it's a swamp.
It's basically
a swamp.
Well, that's all. It's the tropics in general.
Yeah. I mean, I when I read the book, The Orchid Thief, he tells about it, how it's basically a big swamp, and if you don't keep up with it, like if nobody, like, mowed their lawns or, you know, did any pruning or gardening or anything, it would turn into a swamp again in the matter of, you know, months.
Well, it probably would. And, of course, for years, much of that was true swampland, and you would always have somebody who was arrested for selling waterfront property to gullible Northerners. And, of course, you know, they're buying a piece of the Everglades or something. But I'll tell you, lately, I've really started to wonder about Georgia. We have another case of the brain-eating bacteria killing someone.
Oh, no.
Yes. And now this doesn't happen often, but I can think of half a dozen times it's happened in Georgia. So what's in the water?
What is going on in Georgia? Maybe it's the kudzu.
Well, no, it's not, actually. The deal with this, it's the brain-eating amoeba. And the deal is you get it through the nose. You can't get it through the mouth or the air. It's got to be through the nose. So most of these people have been swimming in fresh water, like a lake or a pond.
Oh.
And, you know, I guess submerged themselves and breathed it in. So we now have the news about, you know, here's another one. And it's an amoeba that quickly destroys brain tissue.
I won't swim in anything without chlorine.
Well, I don't know that I'd go that far, but I certainly think there's the sixth case in Georgia. Now, that's over decades, of course, but regardless, yeah, I don't want to think that, you know, you can get the brain-eating amoeba by going for a swim, but there you have it.
Chlorine kills everything, man. That's the way I look at it, you know?
Even the bather, depending upon the ratio.
Well, right. Yeah, but, you know. Albert's right. Brother has a pool, you know, and I'd just as soon go to that than go to a lake or whatever, you know.
Well, you'll be safe from the amoeba.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
So that's one less thing to worry about. All right.
Oh, and I wanted to thank you for telling us the name of that song.
Which one?
The Soulful Strut.
Oh, Soulful Strut, sure. You didn't know that?
We've loved that song for years and never knew the name of it.
Oh, that's too funny. Well, now you do, and
now we do.
Now you know all about
Young Holt Unlimited. We had it on YouTube today in the car. We were listening to it.
Yep. You know all about Young Holt Unlimited. Everything you need to know. All right, good deal. Glad to help.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Talk to you soon. Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, of course, when Soulful Strut came out, and you know it's the instrumental track behind Am I the Same Sweet Girl that Barbara Ackland did, but when that came out, that was still when radio stations had to have news. It was mandated. And so, as I've said many times, all the instrumentals should have just been called This Will Take Us Up to News, because they'd back time them. And then there were a lot of them who, you know, you might hear them for years and say, I don't know what that song is. I always loved it. Takes me right up to news. Yeah, exactly. So looking at this amoeba story, by the way, it was the second one in a month, not in Georgia, but anywhere. The other one was in Nevada, I understand. And I don't know what the particulars were there. But many years ago on KFWB, they were threatened with losing the license. People got so mad because they made an announcement that there was an amoeba on the loose and in Westwood. And people went crazy all over Southern California because there was, and of course, you know, some college kids and all that who knew exactly, you know, maybe they, for all sorts of reasons, were probably studying about it that day or whatever. So they got in on, oh, it's an amoeba sighting. Yes, I saw the amoeba at Gailey, and, you know, or whatever. And this caused literal chaos. I mean, the police were on the lookout for the amoeba. And it's like, what? Yeah, well, I know. My thought every time I hear a story like that is, please, dear God, don't let them vote. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. James, that was the first big hit for DeBarge. That's right, 1982 on Gordy. They had one other single before that, What's Your Name, but it was All This Love that broke wide open, and a wonderful, wonderful song. And then after a couple other releases, I Like It in 82, which was a terrific record. Maybe we'll play that next, because Randy DeBarge co-wrote and sang that with Elle. And Randy DeBarge turned 65 this weekend, Sunday, born in 1958 in Detroit. So a happy, happy birthday to Randy. All right, a young 65. So John just told me that we forgot. Maybe you did too. But this was Ice Cream Sandwich Day. Now, you've still got an hour to do something about it, depending on where you live. And it might be a consideration that is true. Tomorrow is Watermelon Day. I'm telling you, take advantage of Ice Cream Sandwich Day while you can. All right. So we've got the week of calendars here, courtesy of Carol, Show Prep Is My Life Ford, who is just the best at this. And there was a full moon yesterday afternoon. I failed to tell you that at 1:32. But the new moon, if you're into the prosperity check, is what you're interested in. And the next one of those is early Wednesday morning, August 16th, 4:38 a.m. Central. So, other things of note. Well, we got 2 hours to spend together. We can talk about whatever's on your mind. As usual, the show ended last night with several people on hold. Don't make that mistake. Call earlier. I know Jim wanted to talk radio. Always happy to do that, but you need to call while I'm on it, you see, not afterwards. And so, yes, that's the deal. You call, I'll listen. 888-876-5593. Right now, I'll listen to what's going on in the world at large in WGN Radio News from WGN Radio.
If you ever see what's for me, tell him that I love you. Tell him that I care. And if he ever needs me, tell him I'll be there. It happened the other night. We had it, but we didn't fight. He grabbed his hat and slammed the door. Tell him that I need you. Tell him he was right. Tell him that I miss you each and every night. I didn't mean
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. If you're saying that sounds like Patty Drew, well, it is. Not the 1967 Capitol record under her own name, but 3 years before that on Capitol, she and her two sisters, Irma and Lorraine, and Carlton Black, who wrote it and was the bass singer in that, released it as the Drewvilles on Capitol. Tell him. And I thought of that record because I looked up at the screen and I saw two names and I want to talk to them both. But Soroya, it says right by her name, Patty Drew. Oh, well, I can't pass that up. So, Soroya, how are you doing?
Hey, Rockstar, how's it going?
All right. Why are you awake?
Well, you know what? I can't sleep. This is the only other thing I can think of to do.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'll try not to keep you up.
No, you're fine. It was really fun listening to part of last hour, and I'm not always up at this time, but I thought of you because I'm watching this show called Scandal.
Yeah.
And they play so much old R&B. I'm pretty sure because they can't get sued to the rights at this point.
That's funny. So,
but I mean, it reminded me of you because they were playing Patty Drew's Hard to Handle.
Oh, all right.
And I was like, wow, okay, I mean, I kind of like this show. It's, you know, it's a little soap opery, but, you know, we all need a little escapism, if you will.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I'm digging it, and it was funny, I heard that, and I'm like, I'm going to call Raleigh the next time and talk to her about how I'm hearing Patty Drew on, like, an ABC television show, you know?
And what I like about that, of course, she recorded that in late fall of 68, but Otis Redding had the original recording in June of 68, and they did not play Otis, they played Patty.
I mean, I can't really, yeah, that's fantastic, but I can't, I mean, the Otis recording is fantastic as well.
Well, yeah, yeah, but I mean, you almost expect to hear Otis because he's so well known. You really don't expect to.
No, Patty Drew? No,
right.
Not at all.
Right, exactly. So that's neat.
Yeah. it was very cool. I was like, well, that's something to absolutely call about. And I have my little list. Hang on, you know, because I don't call you that often. I make a list.
Oh, no,
you know
this is good. And by the way, it really could have been bad because a year later, Harper's Bazaar recorded Hard to Handle. And Tom Jones did, too. But you don't want to hear these.
Oh, nobody wants to hear that. I mean, honestly, the way I heard that song originally, because of my age, it was the Black Crowes doing it.
Okay, sure.
And that's actually, for what they do, it's a really great cover. I mean, it's, you know, it's for what they're doing with what the original is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they looked it up, and I'm like, oh, my God, I love Otis. I had no idea it was his originally. He was the first person to record it. And then since hearing your show, obviously, all these years I've listened, you know, I knew that Patty Drew did it, too, because we've talked about it. The fun thing is, Riley, I might not remember what I had for lunch last week, but somehow I remember your favorite of your whole team songs. I'm not sure what that's saying about me or if that gets me anywhere in the world.
It's probably saying more about lunch.
Yeah, probably that my lunch is not as memorable. Yeah. Clearly, that is the direction we're going in. Yeah. But I was so impressed because you normally get the whole, you know, there's a certain amount of tunes you get with TV shows.
Yeah.
So
good for them.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Mad Men's kind of the same way. And I know at some point, and you'll have to look this up, that somebody was doing Oh My Angel on their TV show. I just don't remember which one.
Oh, my good God.
And so if I find it, I'll email it to you, but I was shocked. I remember reading it somewhere, and I'm like, really?
Wow.
You want to talk about obscure? I'm like,
wow.
Yeah. So, and by the way, Ice Cream Sandwich Day is far superior to Watermelon Day.
Absolutely. There's no doubt whatsoever.
It's not even close, right?
No. Well, maybe if it's watermelon ice cream.
Indeed. But I remember the time before we had something every day. I mean, you know, I'm not that young. I'm like, there's a calendar. We have something that we celebrate every day now?
Well, sure. Well, I want to know, who memorializes these holidays? Who codifies them? How do they become official? Like, you know, where do you go if you want a day?
Yeah, I'd like to know that, too, because there's lots of... It's kind of how I feel about my tax dollars. I'd like them to go to something I'd like to invest in.
Yeah.
Like, why can't I take my tax dollars and put them in the space program? I'd like to see us go to Mars versus other things I don't want my money going towards. I feel like it's the same kind of thing with the calendar. We don't get a say?
Yeah, I don't know. I assume that most of these are probably product-related, and there's some PR firm that God knows how they managed to get it codified into anything.
Of course there is. It's like politics. Everybody's backed by some corporation, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, publications such as Asparagus Today probably carry a lot of weight.
They could. You never know. It sounds crazy, but you never know who has the lobbying power that way.
That's it. Yeah.
You know, not to get all political, but I was cracking up at that. I'm like, really? And I was laughing because my job I have currently, they do little things like that, and my friend Victoria, who's part of management, she brought in ice cream sandwiches the other day. I'm like, did she know?
Yeah. Well, now I will tell you that on Friday, it is Single Working Women's Day.
Ooh, I'm going to have to tell lots of my friends I work with about that.
Right. It's also International Beer Day. So I can.
That might be more the guys in the office. That's, yeah.
Well, and then it's observed as the Coast Guard's birthday and Barack Obama Day. But I guarantee you, Single Working Women Day could be the one that's spectacular if you celebrate right.
Oh, that would be amazing, actually, and that's cool. Okay, I might not be behind the food stuff, but celebrating single working women, I could get on board with that.
So now what I have to do is go back, because Carol also gives me links into how these are official holidies. Because,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm going to look. At first, I couldn't believe her on some of these. These are not holidays. So now I get links. So let's see here. For the week of, yeah, here we go. Okay, so we got a dashboard. Let's click on Single Working Women's Day. August 4th. The unofficial holiday was created by Barbara Payne, who realized that despite important economic and social contributions of single working women, there were no holidays to celebrate their achievements, creativity, or courage. Thus, Single Working Women's Day was founded in 2006. It falls within Single Working Women's Week a whole week dedicated to celebrating happy single women who are gainfully employed. And part of that is, prior to current times, there was a stigma as far as being single and a working woman and all this. And now you do not have to be married or stay at home to prove that you have worth. So how to celebrate. See, they're not saying how she managed to get this known, by the way. But
nope, not at all.
Yeah, nothing about that. But how to celebrate, honor all the single working women in your life, let them know you admire them. Oh, wonderful. In many parts of the world, being a single woman is still considered a shameful thing. Well, okay, fine. So stay home and let them just mail the money. In any event, we have, because, you know, I'll be happy to go with that route. I'll wait by the post office.
Sure.
So next, it's always on August 4th for whatever reason, and next year that'll be a Sunday because a leap year.
Oh, that's fantastic. I actually am going to hang out with one of my friends on Friday, who is a single working woman, so maybe we'll celebrate.
Yeah, yeah. This is all at timeanddate.com, but near as I can tell, timeanddate.com has nothing official about any of these, so I don't know. Do they take money for this? I'm not sure.
That's crazy. I have two things to say before I go. One, I'm so glad Carol is still giving you show prep.
That
means that she's doing okay, you guys are still talking, et cetera.
Oh, absolutely.
You forever. I know where Carol is in your orbit, so that makes me happy.
Yes.
The second thing I'm going to say is, I don't know if I ever told you how I met my friends in Ohio, but there was this crazy little band called Mandy Marie and the Cool Hand Lukes, who I saw in Indy at the James Dean Fest.
Mm-hmm.
I wound up going to Gayton to see them for a Christmas show. That's how I met all of my Ohio friends. And Mandy has since moved to Austin and has been there for a decade.
I'm
but
so
she's
sorry.
Coming home to... Oh, no. Yeah, right. But she's coming home to play with her new band, Show in Indy, where I've seen her, I don't know, several times at this point, probably five or six.
Good.
And I'm going to pick up my friend Cassie, and we're going to go to Indy and see her. So it was just kind of a full circle, because I know I've talked to you about going to Dayton. I'm going to Indy for a vacation, which doesn't sound exciting, but it's exciting for me.
Hey, I've been known to go to Pittsburgh in winter for vacation, so I can't comment negatively on any of this. Indianapolis sounds as good as anywhere.
Well, it was cool. Her original band name was Mandy Marie and the Cool Hand Lukes.
Perfect.
Fantastic.
Perfect.
I mean, yeah, it's a rockabilly band, so, you know, I'm going to go do my thing. But I want to make sure, I was like, hey, I got to call Raleigh. It's been a minute, and I'm actually up. So I hope you get lots of people calling you the rest of the night, Rockstar. And I hope to talk to you next time I have insomnia.
Yes, I can't wait for it. But on that note, sleep is sacred, so get all you can.
Thanks, Raleigh.
All right, thanks for calling.
Right,
appreciate
bye.
It.
Bye.
All right, so, yeah. Well, it got me to pay... play Patty Drew, and that alone was worth it, though. I love hearing from Soroya. I also love hearing from Renard, and he is joining us with a request. So, Renard, welcome back to WGN. What's going on?
Well, the last time we had talked, you had mentioned about the 500 copies of Higher and Higher went out without my name on it, and
yeah.
I was trying to, it's going to be in the book that I'm writing.
Yeah.
But what happened was that, well, Kel Billy Davis and I wrote that song.
Yeah.
And what happened was Carl Smith and Gary Jackson went into my briefcase, and they went over and took it over to Brunswick to Carl Davis. And they had told them that, that the song, they wrote the song.
Oh, my God.
And we had a big argument, and we won. Shepherd's Publishing won, and, I got my correct share, and we corrected that. Earl Calloway, who was a columnist for the Chicago Defender, he had a lot to do to keep my name out there that I did write it through, and
well,
Broadcasting Music Incorporated.
What I'd love to know is, what did Carl and Gary think they were going to gain by this? Did they think they'd get away with it forever?
The hurting part about it is that Carl and I, he was the one that hooked me up with Billy Davis.
Wow.
And I called Gary and I went to high school together. And he's a good little writer, but, you know, I was trying to copy Holland Dozier and Holland
right.
in Motown and bring it to Chess Records. And, I don't know, I had me and Billy recorded that song on the Dales in 65. And they just changed the lyric. And I don't know what Carl Davis, he just got totally wacko, but we won.
That's just unbelievable that, you know, again, the motivation where they thought, oh, yeah, we can get away with this, you know, that's just insanity.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
And not only that, what was I going to say? Higher and higher. I'll never forget how that came up because of the fact that right there on 22nd and Michigan, there was this greasy spoon, and they served those hamburgers with the chili on it. And the band, Maurice White and Louis Satterfield and some other, Pete Cozy, all of them were, you know, I said I'll be the gopher and get the lunches for us that day. And I did go get it, and I brought it back, and it all hit me about, you know, when, I don't know, when I hit the piano, I felt this drive, and I said, this could go higher and higher and higher and higher. And everybody said, that's it. And that's when Billy came in the studio, Studio E. He said, well, Rob, what is that? And, you know, I ran it to him. And we hurried up and recorded it on the Dales. I gave him the most of the lyric and the hook. But they changed the lyric, and they thought they could get away with it. I don't know. It was crazy.
It was crazy.
Just like that other guy said, he wrote, Don't Mess Up a Good Thing.
There are so many people who, poor Donnie Elbert, half the things he wrote, somebody else claimed to write.
You know, you wouldn't believe Fontella Bass said she wrote Rescue Me.
I would believe that, I'm sorry to say.
She did say it. She said it and was serious. And
oh,
we
yeah.
had to really bring her to the attention that, because I remember the Sullivan Hotel in Chicago, I took the song over there to teach it to her. And, you know, she liked it and everything, but she had nothing to do with writing it. Nothing. And Earl Calloway, he again, and Lee Ivory, who was a colonist in California, or was it Detroit? One of them. Anyway, they kept my name out there and made sure that she didn't get any credit for it.
Yeah, it's amazing when people do that. I remember seeing David Ruffin, and he got on stage and started to do Statue of a Fool and said, he explained what he was doing when he wrote that song, and I said, this is going to come as a real shock to Jack Green, you know, because this had been a country hit. So it's like, you got to be kidding me. So, yeah, Jan Crutchfield actually, I think, wrote it for Jack Green. But, yeah, but here's David Ruffin thinking, well, nobody will remember that.
Well, you see, I don't know. People just try to claim for fame, and I guess they get excited, and they just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I could never go and do that.
Right, right.
I never say I wrote something that I didn't write. That's crazy.
Well, right. Well, apart from that, and by the way, in his wife, David Ruffin's wife, wrote a book about it, and she claimed that he did write it, and you know that Jan Crutchfield took it from her. It's like, what? You know, so.
Well, that's the same thing. Gary Jackson told his wife that he wrote the song, you know, and. They took it away from it. And I have people who, I got witnesses. That's how I won the case. See him go into my briefcase, and him and Carl. And I said, that's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's one of the bullets I dodged.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. No. So you have a request. What do you want to hear?
Well, I'm in that kind of mode, and I think I really want to hear, because you played the barge, and I don't know why. I don't know why I wanted to jump to this, but the mode hit me. Rescue Me. I really want to hear Rescue Me.
You will hear Rescue Me right after the news.
Thank you.
Oh.
I really want to hear it. And you sound good, too, and you have a nice week.
Well, you too, and thanks for calling. It's always a pleasure.
And it's a pleasure. I've been called many names.
Hope to talk to you soon. Okay, thanks, Renard.
Bye-bye.
All right, and Rescue Me will be coming up next on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. No, David Ruffin didn't write it. All right. Renard Minor did, and you just heard from him, and he should be very proud of that, because what a great record. Yeah, just keeps getting better and better as far as I'm concerned. Rescue Me. So, never asked it, Renard, but I wonder how many commercials or movies or soundtracks that's been in, because it's just perfect for that. So, 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh, if it's on your mind, I'll make sure it's on mine. Otherwise, we can mosey down a number of other stories. Now we've got the tabloid. So, so once again, though, I admonish you. I don't know what it is. Toward the end of every show, all the lines are lit. You just have so much to say, and of course, I'm off the air. So, I always say, call back tomorrow earlier, and people, you know, invariably don't. If they call back, quote-unquote, tomorrow, they call back later again. Don't do that. Do that now. 888-876-5593 would be 8888-Raleigh. So, what else do we have? Damning new evidence and this, that, and the other thing that we were talking about. And, you know, a day doesn't go by that we don't see more murder and mayhem as far as that goes. On the political front, and we do stay away from politics, but when they're tabloid worthy, why the hell not? Apparently, Canadians are urging Justin Trudeau to resign. Now, I can think of probably a couple dozen good reasons why he should. No, not this one. He's announced the end of his marriage. And now people are saying, please, Justin, please divorce Canada. Well, no, apparently after 18 years, he and Sophie have decided to call it quits. And so he took to Instagram to announce that, because after all, that's where all the major political decisions are announced. And apparently, though, it was, you know, it takes guts, by the way, to do things on these social media sites, because you'll get a barrage of comments, and in this case, a barrage of hateful comments. So after many meaningful and difficult conversations, we've made the decision to separate. Yeah, probably at about 1,000 decibels, those conversations, but nonetheless, and of course you hear about for the well-being of our children and all that. And so, here's this announcement about his personal life, and immediately every comment is political. Yeah, I don't know how Sophie lasted that long with you. Yeah, resign now, and please divorce us, and all that kind of stuff. And, talk about insensitive. So apparently they met when they were kids growing up in Montreal, got engaged in 2004 and tied the knot in 2005. And now it's end of the line for that marriage. And so there. But I looked at that. How typical. Yeah. Well, firstly, what are you doing, you know, announcing that on social media anyway? So we have other stories that are interesting as well. And some are videos. So I've told you before, if you send me links, don't send me video or audio, because I can't and won't be able to see it. But if it's text, I usually will take a look at that. And so apparently Vince McMahon, WWE, who has retired after some surgery and all that, subpoenaed by federal agents, not 100% sure for what, but haven't yet seen any actions in terms of arrests. Now, if you're trying to evade police because, oh, say you're a drug runner, in what way would you be willing to flee? Would it be leaping out of a plane onto the tarmac at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport? Yeah. Right. Well, at least it wasn't in flight. It was flight 346. It was arriving from Orlando. It had been in flight. This guy looks out the window, sees that officers are waiting, and so he pulls the emergency exit door and, you know, rolls out down the hatch on the tarmac. And apparently he evaded authorities. Ah. As he ran toward number 2 terminal, he was spotted about a half hour after he leapt from the plane and arrested hiding inside a food service truck. Yeah, which explains what you eat on these planes. And so apparently he was wanted for drug charges in Minnesota, and his arrival was, in fact, I guess, telegraphed to, well, it won't be a telegraph, but, you know, the police in Wright County, Minnesota were made aware. And he had a prior arrest for controlled substances. And this time he thought, well, I see the cops. This isn't going to work. I'm just going to, go down the emergency chute and no one will notice me. And, yeah, one of the quick comments was he must have been high if he thought that would work, something to that effect. And, yeah, I'd agree with that. That's from the What Was He Thinking school. Now, of course, In the other case, if it had been that he did get away, we'd wonder about that too. Because after all, we still are looking for D.B. Cooper, and if you remember him, and you know, every now and then you'll see a special on part of him has been found or what have you, and he had hijacked a Northwest plane, Northwest Orient, when it was still that, a 727. And this was like 1971, and it was a short hop. It was from Portland to Seattle, so you know it's basically your 20-minute flight. And he tells the flight attendant he's got a bomb, and he asks for $200,000, and which, by the way, now would be, I don't know, about $1.5 million. And he wanted 4 parachutes upon landing in Seattle, so he releases all the passengers. And he instructs the flight crew to refuel the aircraft and begin a second flight to Mexico City with a refueling stop in Reno. Yeah, well, 30 minutes after taking off from Seattle, he opens the door in the rear, deploys the staircase, parachutes into the night over southwestern Washington, probably. And he has never been conclusively identified. This is 1971. Now, some of the money showed up in 1980 on the banks of the Columbia River. And people were then talking about it all there. And his name was Dan Cooper, as far as what he used on the ticket. But a reporter confused him with another hijacker or another, confused him with somebody else and called him D.B. Cooper. So that's the name that stuck, D.B. Cooper. And Dan Cooper, of course, was it. So he parachuted into the night. And so, probably not far from the Columbia River. You know, did he live? Because you'd think if he didn't, well, the body would have been found by now. And it was active for 45 years in the FBI, and no definitive conclusions. In fact, it's the only unsolved air piracy case in commercial aviation history. And so the FBI, of course, they couldn't solve it. Say, oh, he didn't survive the jump. Yeah, well, where are the bones then? And they said, no, the weather on the flight was not, you know, the time of the flight wasn't good. And he didn't know how to skydive. And the area was heavily wooded where he jumped. And Well, you would think with all of that stuff that you would see some evidence of his remains. Now, like I say, you saw a little bit of the money in 1980, but not the rest of it. Now, they're claiming the money was never spent. Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. Well, I guess they're marked bills, but even so. So it was about, I don't know, July 2016 that the FBI says we're suspending the active investigation. Yeah, after what would that be, 35 years? 45 years. 45 years, they say no. But, of course, his hijacking led to some of the stricter measures, which today are child's play, of course, but metal detectors and baggage inspection that were mandatory before that. And they supposedly retrofitted the 727s with Cooper vanes designed to prevent the aft staircase from being lowered in flight. And that was, you know, was that why hijackings went down? I don't know. But meanwhile, all we know is a guy carrying a black attaché case approaches the counter at Northwest Orient at the time, at Portland International, uses cash, buys a one-way ticket on Flight 305, going to make the 30-minute trip to SeaTac. And on his ticket, it says Dan Cooper. And so here's white male, mid-40s, dark hair, brown eyes, wearing a black or brown business suit, white shirt, thin black tie, a black raincoat, and brown shoes. Got this briefcase, the attaché case, and a brown paper bag. And he boards the flight and takes seat 18E, the last row, orders bourbon and 7-Up, and you know the rest of the story. So, or maybe you don't. Actually, shortly after takeoff, he hands the flight attendant a note. And this is, by the way, daytime at this point. It's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And he hands the note to a flight attendant sitting in the jump seat right behind him. And the note was, by the way, the flight attendant didn't look at it right away. She just figured, oh, it's another guy trying to hit on me, give me his phone number. So she drops it into her purse, and as she's getting up, he leans over and says, "Miss, you'd better look at that. I have a bomb." And yeah, in all capital letters with a felt tip pen, he writes, "Miss, I have a bomb in my briefcase and want you to sit by me." So she returns the note. She sits right down next to him and quietly says, "Let me see the bomb." And so he opens his briefcase. She sees two rows of four red cylinders, which she assumes were dynamite. She'd never seen dynamite or anything else, but she, good enough for me type thing. And attached to them were a wire and large cylindrical battery, so she sold. And then she said, "So what do you want?" And she writes down a note with his demands, brings it to the cockpit, and the flight crew is made aware. And the captain says to her, "Why don't you stay in the cockpit the remainder of the flight and take notes?" And so he then contacts Northwest Flight Operations in Minnesota, relays the demands that I told you about, the money and the knapsack and the parachutes and all that. And that's the way it went. When they got to Seattle, sure enough, he gets exactly what he wants. And by this time, the captain has let ATC in on the situation. They've contacted the police and the FBI, and the passengers know nothing. All they're told in Seattle is the flight's delayed because of a minor technical difficulty. Now, what I don't understand is why the flight's delayed at all, because if it's going from Portland to SeaTac, where's it going after that? They're getting off. Well, maybe not. So meanwhile, the president of Northwest Orient authorizes the ransom payments and all the demands. And for 2 hours, here's Flight 305 sitting on the tarmac and allowing the FBI sufficient time to assemble ransom money and parachutes and mobilize personnel. And none of them were willing to try to get on the plane and call his bluff, to say the least. And so that was interesting that the flight attendant who sat next to him said he was familiar with the local terrain. He said, "It looks like Tacoma down there, and he looks like McCord Air Force Base." And, you know, the guy was not nervous. You know, so, in fact, the flight attendant said, "You know, he seemed rather nice." Well, so meanwhile, the plane circling Seattle, and the the flight attendant said, "Why'd you pick Northwest?" And he laughed and said, "It's not because I have a grudge against your airline. It's just because I have a grudge. This flight simply suited my needs." And so he said he was originally from Pennsylvania, but was living in Minneapolis. And actually, she said that. She was from Pennsylvania, living in Minneapolis. And he responded, "Minnesota was very nice." And he refused to answer where he was from. And he asked if she smoked. He offered her a cigarette. And, you know, so that's the way this went. But where is this guy? All right, why no bodies? What do you think? I don't know. So around 5:24, they after the parachutes and all that were delivered, passengers get to go to the main terminal, and we just now have this guy, and he gets everything he wants, releases the passengers, inspects the money, checks all the goods, and says, "Okay, we're going." And six of the crew members remained on board, and so it was that they took off again, and. It was interesting that they tried I don't know how much they tried, but to in some way, you know, defray this, and this wasn't going to happen. This guy was going to get all his goods, and the FAA said, "We want a face-to-face meeting," and he's nothing doing. I'm the one with the bomb. This shouldn't take long. Let's get this show on the road. And so that's when he told the flight crew, "We're going to Mexico City, and we're going at the minimum airspeed without stalling." Now that was interesting right there. And he said the landing gear must remain deployed. The wing flaps must be lowered 15 degrees. The cabin must remain unpressurized. All right, now at that point, wouldn't you really think that, wait a minute, we just gave him parachutes. This guy's jumping. So the real problem is, of course, that with this configuration, there's no way the plane's making it to Mexico. They're going to run out of fuel first. And so that's when they agreed to Reno, Tahoe. But I think at that point, he was never planning at any point to get to Reno or anywhere else. He doesn't get far at all, like I say. And here he is. He's the aft staircase is lowered. And The stewardess actually said, "I'm afraid I'll be sucked out of the aircraft." Well, not pressurized. So nonetheless, they get him there, and he deploys, so to speak. And what is the deal? All right, so I have no idea. Now, of course, with this in mind, once he's out of the flight, well, they didn't need to. Much of anything. And so, you know, that's it. What's the deal? All right. They have the fingerprints. They have everything else. But you can't tell me that he's dead, because I don't believe it. Well, it might be by now, 1971. That's absolutely possible. But I don't think so. All right. And they did everything, because, you know, it was they even, like, sent a submarine to, like, Lake Tahoe or something. I mean, they did everything. And it didn't matter. So, all right, D.B. Cooper, wherever you are, 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh, on WGN Radio. James, and why am I playing Smokey Robinson and being with you? Because John just came in and said, "I want to hear it." Well, that's good enough for me. I forgot the most important part of the D.B. Cooper story. Yeah, I'm doing this from memory, and not a good one at that. So we'll pick it up there, coming up here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and we've got an hour to spend together. I hope you will call. We got Stephanie, we got Fran, we got James, we got you two. And before we get to any of it, the fact that I forgot to mention about D.B. Cooper, actually one of my favorite facts, don't know how it slipped my mind, was they really don't know where he jumped. And the reason they don't know where he jumped is they didn't see it. And the reason they didn't see it, because there were no witnesses. What had happened was, I mentioned that the flight attendant, you know, begged fear, saying, "I don't want to open the F staircase. I could be sucked out of the plane." Never mind that, you know, it's not pressurized at this point. And so D.B. Cooper, who was Dan Cooper, D.B. was a mistake, and it got known. But anyway, Cooper says to her, "That's all right. I'll handle it. You just go up to the front. Don't come back here. Don't send anyone back here." So she goes up to the cockpit, where she remains for the rest of the flight. And so he's back there. He insisted the lower, staircase be available for him to lower it. And he did. And he left it lowered. Now, as the flight was coming in for refueling in Reno, I don't know, about a half hour later or so, the cockpit, you know, put a message back, you know, basically saying, "You all right back there?" and all that kind of stuff. Well, there was no answer. And so they wound up landing the plane with the staircase down, not knowing what the deal was. And after it landed and they looked, this guy was gone. Now, in terms of where did he jump, the only thing that, and it occurred, I think, to the first officer, it occurred to him later, well, wait a minute, during this flight, pretty early on, right after the flight attendant had come up front, the aircraft's tail section suddenly pitched upward for no reason, and it forced the pilots to trim and retrim to get the aircraft flight level. And so there was a momentary worry there, and really it was just momentary. And the co-pilot said, "Well, that sudden upward pitch occurred while the flight was near the suburbs of North Portland." And so that's how they affixed the location. And later, the FBI, you know, in their simulations and did that, dropped a weight that was estimated to be about Cooper's weight out of an aft staircase in the back to see. And sure enough, the tail portion, in fact, did lift. And so it was, though, that nobody ever saw this guy jump. And other planes that were supposedly in the area, weather was not good. No one claimed to see him. Hell, they didn't even see the Boeing in question, the Northwest Orient plane. So no one knows to this day. And like I say, the big thing in 1980 was that some of the money, a little of the money, not a whole lot, but a little of the money was found by the Columbia River. But there were problems with that, too. And I'm trying to think of exactly what, but it was something where the bottom line is it couldn't have been submerged in the water all that time. It couldn't have, you know, been a lot of things that they were believing at first would indicate that, well, he drowned in the water or whatever. And so, you know, we still don't know exactly how that money got there. And the things we do know, supposedly, is that it wasn't in the water all that time. And yeah, there were rewards looking for it and all that, but a kid found it, and I think that it was a legitimate find. But as to how it got there, that further deepens the mystery. Nobody knows, because, like I say, it wasn't like it fell out of the plane with him and he was gone. You know, since he had strapped the money to his waist, a flight attendant had seen that before they were ordered not to be there. I guess it's possible that some of it could have just fallen off. But I say this guy, you know, he may be dead now because 1971, we're talking 51 years ago. But so chances are good he is dead now. But I don't think he was then. I think this guy was successful. And I've never heard anything to the contrary that would make me believe, as the FBI contends, "Oh, no, he couldn't have survived that." Absolutely, he could have, especially flying that low, that slow, not pressurized. And on and on and on. Yeah, so there's a story. I'll leave you to ponder what it might mean. 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh, Stephanie is in Madison. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, thank you, Raleigh. Before I have some musical questions, I just want to call. I really felt compelled to call and say congratulations to Leah's husband, Albert, for being 29 years sober. That is really worth celebrating.
Absolutely.
It is just worth celebrating. My husband and I, my sober birthday is 9/9/85. My husband stopped in May of 87, and neither one of us has taken it up since. No drugs, drinking, none of it. And I bless the day. And it's not necessarily easy. I mean, I know people that have gone a long time, and they suddenly, for some reason, just get tempted or decide that, you know, to imbibe, and they can't get it back. They either keep relapsing or they just, you know, really, fall.
Let me ask you, prey. Did you know your husband while you guys were drinking?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That's fairly rare, because usually after folks sober up, that's usually the end of the marriage.
Oh, no, it was a godsend. It really was. I do not believe we'd be married still. And he was somebody, I prayed to God for somebody to come into my life. And he was an answer to a prayer. I mean, I really did. Especially looking back and looking at the qualities that we both have and the interests and just everything, you know. But no, he stopped. Actually, our daughter had gone into treatment, and you have to, all the whole family has to stop using anything, you know, drinking, drugs, or anything. When the whole family's in treatment, and it basically, to make long story short, he stopped. He did not go back. Kind of different processes for me. I did AA. And it was really wonderful. My father died of alcoholism. Or now they're calling it alcohol use disorder, but it killed him. And I would not be here talking to you right now if I'd continued to drink and use. I wouldn't be here. After my dad died, I had the urge a few times to really want to drink, especially beer. I became his drinking buddy. It is such a gift. Congratulations to Albert and to Leah. That is a blessing. It is just a blessing.
Now, being in AA, you're aware of high bottoms and low bottoms. How far did you have to fall, and why? Because obviously your husband, the daughter, I understand what a motivation that is. But for you, in September of 1985, what made you say, I got to get a handle on this?
I was having other things. I was kind of at the beginning to lose my vision. The threat of not keeping what I had. I was what they call a high partial. I had, it was crooked, like 20/40. I mean, I was born blind. I had cataracts removed. That's a whole other story. But in 84, I had stopped. I thought, I'm going to try stopping for 30 days. I was on the phone with one of the AA people sobbing. I mean, it was just, I quit for a while. I went back, I went back, and then New Year's Day of 85, I stopped alcohol, but I continued, I smoked dope. A counselor had said that it was a good thing to do. Not so much. I mean, it got kind of ridiculous after a while. So 9/9/85 was when I gave up everything. I was just a wreck, basically. I was kind of just. It was not a low. It was, a high low. But my behavior was, starting to get off the wall. I'd be drinking in inappropriate places, acting inappropriately with people. It's like, yuck, I don't like this. It just, and when I stopped, I mean, I actually had some physical, I really had physical symptoms. I was at the verge. If I'd continued, I think they would have had to hospitalize me and put me in rehab because I began to have withdrawal. My doctor gave me Librium, which I found that's a standard thing to do. I had not realized how bad my drinking got. You know, and it's like, no, I don't want. Oh, I don't. One thing, for I woke up in the morning, about 6 o'clock in the morning, and I had this vision of a tunnel, of a white tunnel, and this quiet little message, your little voice, mine said, you need to stop. You're on the way to destruction. If you don't, it's going to be bad. You need to quit drinking.
Ooh.
You need to stop now. You know, it was like whoa. You know,
so a voice from beyond.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, absolutely. And I am so grateful. I am so grateful because neither one of us, you know, he never smoked. I did off and on, but. For bazillions of years, we have not smoked or done anything, like, you know, at all. And I am so grateful. I mean, I remember being in the shower one morning. I mean, there are times I felt lousy because when I used to drink, you know, earlier, I'd stop for a while just because I'm overindulging a bit, too much partying. I'd feel fine. I felt lousy when I stopped, but I began to start to feel good. You know, my body was recovering. And I remember being in the shower one morning and just having this joy attack. Just like, thank you, God. I'm sober. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, it just, you know, it was like I was so grateful, you know, because I saw where this was going to lead. And because my dad died at 67 years old, you know, 67. His dad died at 57 of heart disease. I mean, they're like real driven people, you know. But and they died way too young. But I just, yeah, I am so glad because I, and you know, the stuff, your temper blows. I mean, just fights with both. We were fighting. It was just, and we both stopped. It's just like, God, thank you. We're still married. And it's a good marriage.
That's,
you know,
great.
He's my best friend. I am so grateful to have him in my life, Raleigh. I really am. You know.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. No, that's a terrific story. You know, it's funny at the doctor today while we were going over my, you know, my world of autoimmunity and more. You know, I said, you know, I really wish I drank and I smoked, because if I did, then I could give that up and feel so much better. But I don't do any of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I got nothing I can give up that way.
You know,
he was not impressed with my Mexican Coke. Didn't feel it was going to do me in. So,
oh, I love Mexican Coke.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah.
I was with my grandkids. My husband and I. We were with our grandkids. He's 26, and then Kay is going to be. She's 29, and I'm so proud of them. We had lunch with them today, and politically, I think it's a little politically incorrect, but Bandit Taco. Taco and coffee, and it's in a really, really cool building. Fabulous Mexican food, and wonderful coffees and all kinds of stuff. And it was so great, you know. Albert and Leah have reason to celebrate.
They really do. Yeah, you betcha.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, they do. I have a question. Who was the gentleman that called in that you guys were talking about people ripping off, taking credits for songs that they didn't write?
Oh, Renard Minor. He wrote Rescue Me.
Yes. I love that song.
Yes.
I do.
And Higher and Higher. He wrote Higher and Higher.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah. And a bunch of stuff.
Yes. Yeah. And you played El DeBarge. I love that song. I love Smokey Robinson, and there's, I think it might be, is there an Elizabeth DeBarge, or no? There's a song called, let's see, it goes, I loved you, you didn't feel the same. There's a part where it says, give me one more chance to love that song. I've heard it on the radio off and on, and I don't know who does it. I think Make It Real is the name of the song. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not.
No, no. It sounds like it probably is more current than me.
It's years, all those years back. Years
how,
back.
How many years are we talking?
I'm thinking 80s, maybe 90s.
No, you're not talking about the Jets. They had Make It Real.
Could be. Make It Real. Yeah.
They did have the Jets did do Make It Real for what that's worth.
I think that's probably who it is. Yeah. I heard it, and people can say with it. I used to listen to Delilah. Once in a while, I'll flip her on.
No wonder you drank. All right. Absolutely.
Oh, God.
Yeah. All right. So here's the Jets. You tell me if it's Jets you're after. All right. We'll see.
That's it.
Oh,
God, that song is such a great song.
Yep, well, that's definitely the Jets. And that's...
Okay. Tonight, oh, I love that song. Thank you. That's what it is.
Yeah, that was 1988 on MCA.
Yep. Thank you. Now I know. It's called Make It Real.
Yeah, that's a
great song.
That is. It's a picture sleeve. I have this thing.
Oh, wow, that is just an awesome song. No, you know, I know, I have mixed feelings because there are things about her in the show, goes way back, that I liked. I remember after 9/11, I mean, I think she was sobbing on the radio. I mean, you know, but there's all the mechanical stuff, and I read somewhere that she has, you know, her talk, and then they insert, depending on the market, they insert different songs. And they have to have CanCon, you know, for Canada. I should say, I had to laugh, though. A lot of the stuff she plays is just the same stuff.
Well, it's for bonbon eaters, but you know, I think that country music owes her a debt of gratitude, country radio, because no self-respecting male is going to listen to that crap. And so more and more we look at today's country as being male AC. And
yep.
I'm like, yep, Delilah alone did that. So,
I love it.
Yeah.
What was that? Her theme.
By the way, you know, that show didn't used to be the way it is. It used to be racy before she found the Lord.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
it was. It was in Seattle. I do remember it.
Oh, God. I think I listened to it way, way, way back when. Yeah, no, I don't like to hear the preach. It's just kind of presumptuous.
I don't want to hear the music. Never mind that. I just, the stuff that she plays, a Butterfly Kisses? No. You should go to hell for popularizing that crap.
Oh, God. Oh, that song used to just give me the willies. Oh, God.
Well, see, I wouldn't know, really, because after about 30 seconds, I'm gone.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And if it was a preset, it's gone.
Oh, God, stop,
Ew. Maybe a very nice person and certainly is successful, and I wish her the best in the world. I just don't want her on any radio I have.
I don't blame you.
Yeah,
I flipped it on one night. And once in a while, she'll say something that will really get to, really kind of reach me. But then it's like, oh, my God, she played that song the other, I thought, all right, what am I doing here, Don't want to listen to public radio. I've been getting weird. I get restless sometimes. I do because a lot of times I would, listen to classical music and stuff. And my daughter she hates classical music.
Oh, you mean the greatest hits of the 1600s, 1700s, and 1800s?
Yeah. Oh, God. I listen to, now I can't listen to, I listen a lot to WGN. For some reason, I don't know what it is. I'm just,
well, we're glad to have you.
I love it. I do. I listen to the people during the day. They have great daytime people like John Williams. Lisa Dent. I love Lisa Dent.
Oh, good.
I think she's. Yeah.
Excellent.
Love you and all you guys. Love this show. And
Well, always good to hear from you.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're here, you know.
Well, I'm glad I'm anywhere. All right.
No, listen, I'll come back. I have more thoughts. I want to share them another night.
Okay, good deal.
People being there for other people, you know, so.
Absolutely.
You are a friend to people, you know, who need a friend or, it's genuine. You're a friend in the sense, not in the, you know, normal sense. I don't want to, you know, but being there and having somebody to talk to. I'm glad you're here. You guys
well, and I'm glad you called because I get sick of talking to myself. So do it again soon.
I will. Okay. I will definitely do
Thanks.
That.
Thanks. Appreciate it. All right.
All righty.
So 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh. And that is going to take us to Laura in Willowbrook. Hello, Laura. What's up?
Hey, Raleigh. I was so excited when I heard you talking about B.B. Cooper.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Real quick, if you have a second, I just wanted to tell you a quick story and then I'll lead into D.B. Cooper.
Hang on, wait a minute. I'm blowing the news. Hang on a minute. Don't go away.
Go
Stay
ahead.
Right where you are, and we'll be back right after these words of wisdom on WGN Radio.
Of a fool made of stone, an image of a man who let love slip through his hand and then just let him stand there all alone. Should be placed to honor the million tears he's cried, and the hurt in his eyes would show.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Regardless of what David Ruffin says, that's the original Statue of a Fool. That's Jack Green, 1969, and it was Jan Crutchfield who wrote it. Now, interestingly, also in 69, Johnny Bush recorded it. Why is that interesting? Because what David Ruffin said is, no, I wrote that when I was 17 years old, and I was little Ed Bush then. And what? Yeah, little Eddie, I think, Eddie Bush. I thought, well, there was Ed Bush, a talk show host, much later. But in any event, when David Ruffin recorded it, it was a flip side. And it did claim that he was the writer, but it was 1976. So a number of people had a hit with that. Jack Green, like I say, was the original. But Ricky Van Shelton and Brian Collins. And there was even a Bill Medley version of that Larry Butler produced in the latter 70s. So it was 77, I think. So, yeah, almost contemporaneous with the David Ruffin composition, not... I think I was supposed to play something else, but I don't remember what it was, so I just defer to Jack Green. All right, so back, maybe it'll come to me, I don't know. Back to Laura in Willowbrook, who I rudely interrupted, and I forget what we were talking about, too. Laura?
Hey, that's okay, Raleigh. It's worth the wait. D.B. Cooper.
Oh, yes.
I really find that story just fascinating. Unfortunately, I didn't hear all of it, so I hope I don't make you repeat something, but... he got out of the plane and threw bags of money out, right?
He didn't. The money was snapped to his waist. He belted it around his waist. the money. He had asked for, you know, when it was in flight originally from Portland to Seattle, he asked for a couple of parachutes, and he asked for the money, and he asked for a few other things. And so when it took off again, finally, you know, his instructions were, you got to fly it low, and he wanted to go to Mexico City. They said, well, flying it low and at that altitude and that speed, we can't make it to Mexico City. We got to refuel in Reno. And so he said, okay. So anyway, the deal was that he ultimately himself lowered the aft staircase. It's a 7-2, so all the engine, all three engines in the back. The flight attendant at this point has gone up to the cockpit where the pilot said, stay here. And so he's alone. And so for a long time, it was not known where he parachuted out of this plane. But ultimately, they narrowed it down to it was probably a northern suburb. Well, that would be Washington, but an eastern suburb of Portland.
Wow.
So that was the deal. But they don't know for sure. They affixed that location because they felt the tail lift suddenly, at which point they think that's when he deplaned. But no, he had the money. He had the money snapped to him. You know, it was tied around his waist.
Now, did the plane land okay eventually?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it not only landed okay. That was a funny thing because before the landing, the pilot, you know, radioed back to him on the intercom, basically, you know, we've got to pull up the staircase. We're coming in for a landing, and nothing. And so, you know, remember, this guy claimed he had a bomb, and he showed the flight attendant what ostensibly was a bomb. I doubt it really was, but it fooled her.
Uh-huh.
In any event, so they wouldn't go back there. So they actually landed the plane in Reno with the staircase down.
And, oh, no.
And they thought that he was still in it. Well, little did they know, after it landed, no, he was long gone.
Oh, my.
Yeah, he was out of there. And so, you know, there was a lot of talk about it at first, because this was 71, and then 9 years later, in 1980, a little bit of the money shows up at the Columbia River. And some 8-year-old kid found the money. And so not all of it by any means. I think it was something like $5,300 or $5,800. I don't remember the amount right now, but not a lot. Because he got a few $100,000. You know, what he asked for in current money would be about $1.5 million. But, you know, at the time, I think it was a few hundred thousand. In any event, so some of this was found, but... at the time, everybody said, oh, well, this proves he's dead. There's never been found a body or anything.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is that when they really looked into the money, there was no way that it had been floating in the Columbia River all that time. And there were there were other things about the money that made the story incongruous. And so it's hard to say where that money came from, but it did not come from off his waist when he jumped.
Wow.
So well, where is Dan Cooper?
Wow.
Well, of course, now he's probably dead. He, you know, like I say, he was in his 30s then, and that's over 50. It's 51 years ago now. So
I didn't remember that anybody had found any. I figured it's got to be somewhere.
Oh, no, the kid found the money, and the kid got half the money. I think that it split it, as I recall, split it with the insurance company, I think. You know, but it was a long time where he got nothing because, you know, they were going and they had marked the bills and all that. Oh, something else that was really weird that happened is, about an hour after it would have been that he jumped from the plane based on what they can figure, you know, again, nobody saw it happen, but based on what they can figure in the area, not far from the area where he would have been, there was a convenience store that was robbed. And the only thing, the only thing taken was survival stuff like beef jerky.
Oh, my God.
And so, and they never did find out who did that. So, you know, and so who was he? On part of the flight when he was, you know, when they were going up to Seattle, when he was talking to the flight attendant, he pointed out, like, oh, yeah, that's Tacoma. And then he pointed out one of the Air Force bases and all that. He knew the area. So there were some who thought, you know, maybe he was at one point in the military when they got him, because he saw McCord, which is only about 20 minutes from SeaTac. But most of the people there don't know what McCord is. And so he knew that. And you know, they were trying to piece together who would this be.
Wow.
And the name on the ticket was Dan Cooper. DB was because a journalist got it wrong. And
I'd never heard his first name. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Dan. They got the DB because what they started to do was look for every Dan Cooper and in the area. I mean, and they interviewed them all because they didn't know. And so one of them was a guy named DB Cooper, and the journalist mixed it up. And so, and then it wound up going out on AP, and so everybody to this day calls him DB Cooper. But on the ticket, yes. it said Dan Cooper. But what was going in his favor was it was not a clear night, and so by the time that flight got back in the air, because it was on the ground at SeaTac for a couple hours while they were waiting for him to get his parachutes and money and all that.
Oh wow!
They had a couple F-106 from McCord actually, and others following it, but none of them were, they could maintain the S pattern and stay behind the 727, which, like I say, was moving at minimal speed, just enough to stay aloft. Nobody saw anything. It wasn't good enough.
Wow.
Good
timing that he did it. But I have a theory. Maybe you'll think this is crazy, but it's like, my guess was like the pilot and him had something in going on. So they had this planned all along, and the pilot had something to do with it, and they were splitting the money or something.
Oh, that's funny. No, I think we've cleared everybody that we know. Believe me, the FBI looked at this for 45 years.
Wow.
And I don't think Captain Scott was a captain of the flight, and I really don't think so. You know, that was probably not, but in any event, my whole point was I didn't believe that he died. Like, you know, the FBI's, well, he couldn't have made it. Yeah, I think he did make it.
Yes. There's a lot of military and survivor skilled people out there. Yeah. So
no, I don't, like I wow. say at 80 something years old, I don't know that he's still with us now. But I think he was. But yeah, that money, it was under $6,000 that 8-year-old kid found. But and it was confirmed that it was part of the ransom. But there was another weird thing, like a little of it was missing, you know, which was kind of weird. And the way the money was matted together, it was more like it had been deposited into the river then had been deliberately buried. So they gave that up. But it couldn't have been in the river for 9 years, because if nothing else, the bands that were tying it together wouldn't have held up that long in the water. You know, who knows?
Yeah. Well, really, I'm always just amazed at the knowledge you have of music, but just stuff in general like this. Darn, how do you know so much about this?
You know,
oh, my gosh.
I just remember it, and I've always wondered. You know, when they found that money in 1980, there were 10 bills missing from one packet. And so that kind of says, well, then maybe it didn't fall off of them. Somebody took that money. Well, who was that, and why was it there? We'll never know. So
Exactly.
People wonder why I don't sleep
Raleigh.
At night. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it, Laura.
All right, I appreciate it. Have a good night.
Okay, good deal. Yeah, I mean, this is exactly why I don't sleep at night. These are the things that matter not, but at 5 in the morning just have me wondering. So now I'm wondering with you. Well, let's see. By the way, we're coming up to the end of the show again, and it's not Fran or James's fault because they've been waiting a long time. But I am going to ask both of them and Sherry to call earlier. But let's see what we can do about finishing this hour out. We'll do this, and we'll be right back to it in moments. I won't even play a bumper right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, we got about 7 minutes here, and let's see what Fran in Austin has to say for her bad self. What's up tonight, Fran? Are you still with me, Fran? No, Fran gave up the ghost. Oh, well, it was bound to happen. She tried, and hopefully she'll try it again tomorrow night. Well, let's see if Sherry from Naperville is still hanging in there. Are you there, Sherry?
I'm here.
All right.
I wanted to extremely thank Stephanie for her story and sharing. How long has she been listening to you?
I don't know. A while.
Like more than 2 or 3 years?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, there's a lot I'd like to say, but I'm timid about that. But,
by the way, your radio is on. I'm competing with myself.
Yeah, I know.
Right,
I'm turning it down as we speak.
Yeah.
Is there any reverb or what do you call it?
No, I just get to hear myself, you know, 9 seconds later, so.
Okay. And no, I really appreciated that because my stepdad went through a lot because of my mother, the Wicked Witch. At any rate, and she's ruined so many lives. David, quit. You had no clue. Anyway.
Are you talking to an animal?
I will go in the bedroom and talk so I don't have to
look
at
you. Are you talking to an animal?
No, I'm talking to David.
Oh, my God.
Because he does his little...
All right, well... Well, no.
Anyway, I really appreciate that, and I'm grateful for Albert's.
Yeah.
Yes, and because I remember my dad, everybody referred to him as Big Ray, which I think was the guy who founded a...
Bill.
Yeah, but in this neck of the woods, it was Big Ray. I'm not sure where that came from.
Well, the original one was 1935 in Akron, Ohio. It was Bill W.
Okay. It just brought back a slew of memories, and I want to thank Stephanie from the bottom of my heart because life is hard, and we all have to cope, and people's threats really ruin lives. And it's not funny. And thank God for her to pull through everything,
all right,
every way she could.
Well, and she did, and you are too, and this is a safe haven, and call me again soon.
One other question. When's the last time Stacy called you? Because I'm worried about her.
Last week. And so maybe Stacy will call tomorrow night.
Oh,
all right, thanks. Talk to you again soon.
Okay.
All right.
Love you both.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Now, the real waning moments here, and he's been waiting, and it's a star of stage, screen, and the greatest links of all time, James from the South Side, who, as usual, has done himself proud. So, James, what was your favorite story today?
Okay, where this doctor in South Korea saved these abandoned babies.
Oh, that was a good one, yes. Yes.
I said, now, that made me smile. I said, oh, now, at least in this whole group of depressing, depraved stories, here was like a bright, shining light.
Yeah, and speaking of shining lights, I kind of liked how hidden details in ancient Egyptian tomb paintings are revealed. So now we're finding out about the pharaohs.
One, yeah. Yeah, I was hoping to get another one of those Cro-Magnon ones in there for you.
this is good. This is all good. And I enjoyed finding out about the ancient Egyptians. And, of course, we'll forever wonder about the pyramid. So any information is good information.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'll give you this much, that whoever designed them was an even better architect than even some of the ones we have now.
Well, yes, and obviously our scientists have gotten off track. The reason I say that is we now have the headline that Russian scientists have successfully grown watermelons in Antarctica. And I say to myself, I hope to God it wasn't tax dollars.
Well, it's in Russia. Okay, Putin has to do something to entertain himself other than Ukraine.
I don't know, but apparently watermelons are Russian. Well, actually, they're from the Sudan, 4,300 years ago, and all of that. Now they've decided that they have made Antarctica a home for watermelon. They've run out of things to investigate. That's what's happened here.
Yeah, but hey, think about this. That can be a lead into tomorrow is watermelon.
Well, it is.
Yeah,
well, thank you for that. That's a perfect way to end the show. I think I'll go get some now. We will reconvene 21 hours from now, and I'll talk to you then. Thanks, James.
Okay,
all right.
You take care. God bless.
You too. So we thank Adam for keeping us on the air. We thank John for screening your calls. We thank you for calling. You don't know how much that means to me. I hope you'll do it again tomorrow, 21 hours from now. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.